Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world effectively manage risk. For access to free educational tools and resources for the active individual trader, please visit activetrader.cmegroup.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in for this episode with Anthony Masseroni. Remember, new shows are posted every Monday and Thursday. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes and YouTube. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave a review on iTunes. Before I play today's interview for you, I want to give a shout out to the great sponsors of Futures Radio Show. CME Group, Trading Technologies, RJO Futures, and Top Step Trader. To learn more about these sponsors and the important things they are doing for futures traders, be sure to click on their logos on our website. Today I spoke with electrician at Local 3 IBEW and full-time trader and family man, Anthony Masseroni. Right out of the gates, you're probably wondering, why am I bringing on someone who's a full-time electrician but also a full-time trader? Well, as futures trading continues to grow around the globe, a large part of that growth is coming from traders that have full-time jobs. So I wanted to bring on my friend Anthony to discuss his journey on becoming a trader while working a full-time job as an electrician and, of course, as a family man. He shares with us how he developed his own process and strategy, how he executes his trades, manages his positions, what trading has taught him about himself, and how his best teacher for learning came from his losses. Without further ado, let me take you right to the interview with Anthony. Ant, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Ant, thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you here today, Ant. So you're a union electrician by trade, but you're also a full-time trader, and you have two jobs, really three jobs, because you're also a family man. So you devote full-time to your job as electrician, full-time to your job as a trader, and obviously full-time to your family. And what I want to start off with today is I'm very curious about why you decided to devote your time off from working and being a family man to becoming also a full-time trader.
Well, it's funny how it worked out. Initially, it was just a general interest. You know, we're all essentially drawn to investing because of the sexy nature of it, and it kind of pulled me in. And once I started, it was just this interest, kind of hobby, continued to snowball, and it was just something gone wild. And by then, before you know it, it's too late and I'm already hooked. So here I am now. And I always knew, no matter what your career path is, you needed to do something with your linear income to make it exponential, to better your financial future.
I'm curious as to what you were watching. Was it financial news? Was it something in social media? Was it a family member? What triggered you to get interested in actually trading?
And this is the worst possible answer for me in hindsight, but it was penny stocks. I got started with penny stocks.
So, well, was somebody pitching them to you, or how did that all happen?
I literally overheard a conversation and on the street, and I said, all right, you know, maybe I should do that. Because when people talk about penny stocks, they don't talk about, or even any stocks, they don't really talk about what they lost. They talk about what they gained. So I overheard that, which might not have even been truth. And I decided, if they could do it, why can't I?
And what year was that you were looking at these penny stocks?
This must have been around maybe late 2004, early 2005.
Can you share with us any of your trades or experiences that you went through when you were trading these penny stocks?
Yeah, so when I made my first purchase, literally first purchase I made, I took a very small position value-wise and multiplied it by, I think it was about 14 times that amount in an extremely short period of time. At this point, I thought I was the man. This is it. I'm going to retire in a year. Fast forward a month or so, and I think we all know how the story ends. It was gone.
So next I want to talk about how you found a strategy through all of this, because anybody that listens to this show or see me on Twitter knows that I think that it is, I feel very strongly about this, that each trader has to find a strategy that fits their personality. So how did you figure out what type of trader you were or were going to be or wanted to be? And then share with us some of the struggles you went through finding that answer.
Well, I didn't know. I really didn't know what type of trader I wanted to be. And even if I did, I'm sure it was completely off of what I really, who I really wanted to become. It was just a journey from day one, an emotional journey. I didn't know or have any expectations about myself as a trader. And that was my biggest problem. I just wanted to get rich quick and try to run off of adrenaline. I realized after doing that, that that's not going to work for me. It just didn't match me as a person, as an individual. And then over time, and I mean a lot of time of losing, I then developed a strategy of trading and investing that was more or less a reflection of me as a person, as an individual.
A couple of things. If you wouldn't mind sharing with us how much capital you started with and then how much you went through, and also the time that it took you to go through it.
Sure. When I first started, I put $1,000 on a penny stock, turned that into 14 relatively overnight, turned that to zero in less than a day. Essentially, that's what it felt like, at least.
And then how long of a time between that and then you figuring out who you were as a trader, and we're going to talk about process and strategy next, but I just want to know like the time that it took you to figure all of it out.
Okay. Yeah. So after the penny fiasco, I decided to get real and start really educating myself. It was almost like I was motivated by, you can't really say anger, but I was just so upset. I felt like I might have failed, and I didn't want to just give up at that moment in time. So I really started to educate myself, really read a lot, try to understand classical investing, and then I got drawn into your common stocks. So from that point on, from my initial purchase, I really let the investment show me which way I want to go. And it took a really long time. I know I say a really long time. I said it before, but we're talking maybe 6, 7, 8 years. And even till today, I'm trying to adjust, because it's not that you can match your style of investing to your style of who you are as a person and stick with that until you retire or until you want to just call it quits. Because during that process of learning how you want to trade, you're becoming a different person as you get older. What you wanted and who you are is changing over time. So even till today, I still tweak my investment style. Although where I'm at now, I kind of feel like this will stick. This will have this will be my long-term go-to strategy.
I love the way you just talked about that, because I know from my experience that I felt at certain times that, okay, this is it. This is the way I'm going to be as a trader forever. This is how I'm going to make my living. You know, I went from a scalper for many, many years. And then as I got a little bit older in the industry, I started feeling like I didn't want to scalp as much. Also because I wasn't doing as well as a scalper, but that's, you know, I felt that it was because my personality changed, not because I didn't feel that I couldn't do it as well anymore. I feel that I was just mentally changing and I didn't want to be as active. So as traders, we have to allow ourselves to be who we are, right? Our personality yeah. comes through in the strategy we choose. And when we allow ourselves to adapt to who we are, we could find a strategy that works. And that's why we're going to talk a lot about execution, but let's talk about your process and your strategy. I've watched you on Twitter for some time now. You're very consistent with what you put out. And I respect that. It's like you can go through your feed and you can see the consistency in your process. Talk to us about what your process and strategy are.
Well, first of all, thank you, Ant, for that. And the process where I'm at now is, I guess, relatively new. It's basically 3-4 years. Because like I said, there's that emotional journey that gets you to a point. You learn who you are. Now I'm a little older. I calm down a lot more. And I've kind of figured out who I am as a person. I might say in the future that I regret saying in my 30s that I knew who I was as a person. I might even laugh at that concept. But right now, at least I feel that I do. And I'm a firm believer that you've got to figure out who you are in this journey, because that identity crisis can easily turn into a portfolio crisis. And now at this stage, my style is just toned down so much. And I'm extremely interested in the longer term aspect. So essentially what I do is I start with a fundamental scan. And then after I do my scans, if everything checks out, not everything meaning there's this huge list of criteria. It's a basic fundamental scan. And when things check out, I then hit the charts. So I'll look at a chart and see if there's anything intriguing there. If there's something intriguing, I'll look to see if it's going to be breaking out of a consolidation range, if it's going to be breaking out of a downtrend. I look for anything that could possibly be something going forward. But then I step back a little further and I look for reasons to avoid that potential entry as opposed to reasons to jump right in.
Do you have a specific set of criteria that you follow before you decide to trade a market?
I do. I do. There's certain levels of criteria that are extremely important to me. Earnings per share, I look at profit margin, I look at sales. The list changes, and the reason why I say it's somewhat basic, because it changes. First, I'll try to categorize a company. Is it a growth play? Is it a turnaround company? Is it a cyclical company? And then from there, I try to find criteria that would be priority for a turnaround. I look for, are they reducing debt year over year? But I wouldn't really look for that in a growth company. So that's why I say it's a basic level of fundamental analysis. And then once I find something in a chart, I'll dive deeper. I'll read the reports. I'll check everything out year over year and see if it's there.
What technical analysis do you use?
When I first started, I was all over the place. I keep it as simple and clean as possible. If I can put one line on a chart, I'll do it. Moving averages don't really stand out to me all that much. But if they do show a blatant trend, I can't avoid that. But I'll look for just horizontal lines or downtrend lines, your common patterns, and I look for breakouts or a breakdown. And then I'll trade it based off of that.
So to peel this back a little bit, what you look for is you start with fundamental analysis, then you go yep. to the charts, and then you use the basic patterns, you use moving averages, and you use trend lines, and you look for all reasons to support that fundamental analysis. And then from there, you then look for reasons not to get in.
That's exactly it. So I could spend a lot of time hitting the charts, reading the reports, and just call it quits on that potential position. I might say it's not for me. It's just not my style. It's just not all there. Nothing's really aligning. And if I do find it appealing, I wait for that breakout. I can actually watch a stock for years. I've done it so many times. I'll keep a position on, not a position, I'll keep a company on my watch list. And I'll just check in on it randomly for years and years and years and years. And I will always watch to see if it will break a downtrend or a consolidation range. And then I buy on breakouts. I don't like to buy once it's within range. I always say I prefer breakouts over bargains. And I say that because any company can continue, whether even if it's a fundamentally sound company, it can always continue to consolidate so much further. Or even worse, it could head south at that point. And I hate being in a position once in a consolidation range or still trending downward. And I feel that it does take time for the value of a company to be reflected in the stock price. And that's why I'm watching those breakouts.
I get a real good sense as to how you get in, but how do you get out of a trade? Talk to us about that.
Getting out is a funny one. I keep it so simple for a trade that would be in blue sky territory, meaning there's really no overhead resistance from previous highs, not your projected move, based off of patterns. So at that point, I will let a company ride, being a long-term investor, of course. I'll let a company ride in my portfolio as long as the story remains the same. Or I get out at my initial stop, which is usually just below my entry. But if the company is in a downtrend and breaks that trend line and starts heading up, I exit the full position at the previous resistance levels. So I abandon it completely. I treat it like I never even watched this company, but I'll check in going forward. And if it breaks through that resistance point, I now establish a new position with that company. If it can close, if I watch a weekly chart, to close the week above, or a monthly chart, to close the monthly candle above that resistance. And now I treat it like it's a brand new position.
Can you be specific as to your process and how you determine your stop?
So I will identify where I want to exit before I even enter the position, like most people do. And I think that's,
yep.
I think that's the best thing that one can possibly do. You really know how much you're going to lose unless there's some huge gap down, something completely out of your control. Not that we can control price action. But somewhat, at least somewhat, you can cut your losses at least. But my exits of profit are the main focus. And those are the previous resistance levels extended horizontally across the chart. And when they hit, I exit. And that's my, not my stop loss, but that's my target. My stop loss is usually just underneath my entry.
When you say it's just underneath your entry, is it a percentage of your portfolio that you're risking? Is there a form of technical analysis that you use to determine that stop? Is it, you know, what is it that you say that's where the stop price needs to be?
Okay, so being a breakout buyer, I actually really enjoy being a breakout buyer because to me, you have the clearest exit. Your clearest loss. There's really no arguing it. Once it fails, that breakout, there's no justifying being in that position. For me, it can break out, fall below. I could get stopped out, and then it could scream up, but I don't have that fear of missing out on anything. It can always run without me. There's plenty of trades out there. And even in the same company, there will be plenty of entry opportunities that will present themselves down the line. So for my stop, and when I say just below my entry, it's not a percentage of my portfolio. It's all about the price per share. To confirm that breakout, I really like to see a weekly close remain above If it closes out, if I'm looking at weeklies, I say weekly chart, weekly close, because I'm mostly focused on weekly charts, weekly and monthlies. If it closes above, I stay in. If it closes below, I get out. And that's just, it's as simple as that for my stop.
How are you allocating capital between each look that you're seeing? It's something I'm always curious about when I speak with people that trade stocks, because what happens if your board lights up with all these different opportunities? How are you, and maybe you're in full positions in a bunch of other stocks and you can't go and get those opportunities. Like, how do you narrow it down to say, these are the ones I'm going to trade? And then are you trading them all the same contract size, same share size, or are you changing based upon the look, how big or small you're trading?
So that's a really good question. I like that a lot. Again, I keep it simple, equally weighted positions. I don't try to go heavy in one thing or light in another, unless it's a super speculative, high risk asset. I might go extremely light. But those are rare for me because I don't really get involved with those. But all position sizing is basically the same in my portfolio. Now, if I see something, if I'm maxed out on capital and I see something worthy of establishing an entry, I might then decide to sell something. If I read the reports recently, I didn't like something, or I saw that it was trending down, I will actually leave that position if I see something that shows the potential of yielding a greater return. Of course, that's only confirmed through hindsight, but at least at that moment in time, I might take out my weakest player and purchase something new.
I get a real good sense as to how you get in, how you're getting out. I want to talk about how you're managing these trades. So if you could walk us through a recent example or one that you've had over the past year to where you tell us how you got in, and then walk us through how you manage that trade to eventually getting out.
All right, great. A good example was AMD. I believe it was bull flagging for quite some time, although it was extended so far, I don't know if you could call it that. I decided, and this is rare for me, I decided to take what I call a speculative entry by buying at support while it was still in consolidation. At this point, I purchased calls in hopes that it would go up. I say hopes because I'm not very confident playing off support. I feel that the rug is just pulled out so much more often than failed breakouts. So I established a position with AMD at support while it was still trending down and within consolidation range. And I purchased calls in hopes of exercising that position if it would later break out of the upper trend line. Eventually, it hit that upper trend line. And now before, like I said, for my exits, I will leave a position completely at a resistance level. Could have been a previous high, could have been the upper line of the channel. In this case, that's exactly what that was. I believe it ran from 10 to 13 and changed, maybe 13.5. I forget exactly. And I exited the position there. I actually didn't exercise the calls. I exited completely because it happened extremely quick. It happened within 8 weeks. I remember it because I projected the previous bounces were all 8 weeks before they hit the upper trend line. So I just bailed the position. And now, like I said, I treat those previous resistance levels or current resistance levels as a new breakout to watch for. So I had no problem walking away from the position at that 13.5 range. I said, if it breaks out, I could always buy higher. That was one of the biggest challenges I had when I was younger. I had this irrational fear of selling a stock and buying it at a higher price, as if that defined failure. I now am able to do that with the confidence of purchasing a new breakout. And I always look at it as a new chapter for the stock to continue its run or start a run even. So I exited at the upper trend line of the channel re-entered on a weekly close above that trend line, considered it a new breakout, ran that up again to the previous high, not previous all-time high, previous high of that flag pattern, exited again because it's a resistance point, watched for a breakout. I entered, ran it up, and that thing happens. That thing moves a lot quicker than I thought. Might have even gotten lucky on that one. But that's just a good example of how I treat position management.
It's fairly active, and to me, it's also discretionary because you're looking at a couple of patterns or trend lines to where you had to draw them. It's not something that is completely systematic to where it's always the same exact trend line, maybe on the exact same time frame. You're looking for those things. We already talked about your process and how you looked at things fundamentally, and then you look for things to contradict your analysis to get in. But you do use some discretion, and very active to me. I know that maybe it's not active in terms of every day, but it's active in terms of watching every day to where you're waiting for something to happen to trigger, and then you go out and execute that trade. One quick thing before we go further is you mentioned that you used options on this particular play. So what I'm curious about is, are you using options in maybe your more speculative plays like you talked about and outrights when they're less speculative? Is there a reason why you use options and not just outrights?
That's exactly it. It's what I call a speculative position. I almost talk to myself before entering and say, you have no right to establish a position here, or yes, it's justifiable. If I have no right, but yet I still believe that the pattern will continue, I'm now speculating. I'm buying in hopes of selling it higher to someone else. If it screened up, that's when I would probably exercise those calls. But in this way, my downside risk is much more defined by purchasing calls on the speculative place.
Can you share with us some of the mistakes and struggles that you felt were instrumental in helping you choose your strategy?
I don't know. I don't know if I chose my strategy. I think it all just fell into place over time and still is falling into place. I never really learned what to do ever, even to this day. I say that to myself. You don't know what to do in this game. You really just know what not to do. And that not to do list is just growing every day. We all still make mistakes. We overlook certain things. We don't prioritize certain things. It's just a changing landscape, economically speaking, which is always reflected in the market. So I'm constantly evolving, and I think the market just steered me in a certain direction.
We both agree that, and we both believe that as we grow as people, we grow as traders, we grow as investors. What are some of the traits that you believe that you have really learned about yourself throughout the time that you've been a trader from when you started till now?
Well, there's just so many. I'm that guy that whenever anything comes up, I always emphasize my point by saying it's just like investing. It's just like trading. It's, you know, I'll say it to my friends and family all the time, and they don't trade or invest, so they can't really relate. But there's just so many things about this journey, this process, that kind of mold you into a certain direction and make you a certain type of person. Like we said before, it's good to match your style of trading to your style as a person, but one can really flip-flop the other or nudge it in a certain direction. It doesn't necessarily mean your trading has to match your style as a person. Your style of a person can change because of how investing had an impact on it. The number one thing is patience. It really is patience. I don't really force much in life. I learned that from investing. it's the same as my 9-to-5 grind every day. You know, you try to force something, you're going to create a problem. Just let it be.
It doesn't sound to me like you had any mentors in the industry, did you?
No, not a single one.
So what were the things that you did to learn about the business? Did it come from Twitter? I know that you're obviously on there. Did you meet people on there? I mean, how did you go about learning about trading?
So I learned about trading by losing. It was that simple. I didn't have anyone tell me that what I'm doing is right, what I'm doing is wrong. I learned by losing capital. There's no arguing with that. You lost money. At the end of the day, you lost money. Something's got to be wrong. It's not subjective. You can't blame it on anything else. That's just the bottom line. So I learned a lot by losing. I still do. And I'm pretty hard on myself because I always say every trade, if it's profitable, I kind of disregard it. But I really, really harp on the losing ones. And I always revisit those because the most lessons you can learn are from your losers. I actually say I never really even learned anything from a profitable trade, which is kind of extreme to say. And I know that, of course, that's not exactly what I mean. But in a rough sense, and overall, to years of investing, I've learned very little from profitable trades. I always say it could have been luck. You really don't know. But those losses, they're on you. You have to take ownership of them. And you can revisit them and ask yourself, what went wrong? Look at the charts. Dive into the fundamentals. There's got to be something. Not every time. You know, bad luck is on our side a lot. Not a lot, but it's there. It presents itself. There's no denying that. But I'll always visit my losers because that's where I've learned.
I mean, you basically took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say that pretty much 100% of what I've learned about trading has come from losers. And I agree with you that I was going to follow it up and say, hey, you know what? That's probably too strong of a statement because I learned a lot from watching other traders. I did learn from winners. I learned from a lot of different things. But to me, the perfect analogy for me as a trader and why I've learned so much from losers is when I started to play golf. And I could go out on the range and just hit balls. And I was self-taught. I mean, I've had a couple of lessons here and there, but I learned by watching other golfers. I learned from watching videos and just went out there and just kept hitting balls. And I got to the point where I was striking the ball really well, putting really well. And then I would go out and I would play, whether it would be in, you know, a tournament with other golfers, or you'd be playing with friends and you'd have a little money on the line. And all of a sudden I wasn't nearly as good as I was on the range. And I'm thinking to myself, why is this happening? I'd stand in front of a putt and the putts that I would be draining or even missing on the range or wedge shots, it kind of blew over my head. I didn't take them nearly as hard as when I went out there and I missed them on the course. Then I would go home and I would think about specifically why I missed that shot, how I missed that shot, how I missed that putt. And then I would think about that and literally dream about it. And then when I started to go back and play on the range, I'd make them and I had to be in the live matches, the live games before I really figured out how I got better from the last time. And that goes from me making the mistakes in live situations. This is why I don't know how much you did on sim, but this is why I tell people all the time. And obviously everybody out there knows if you've done sim trading before, everybody's a great sim trader because when you're doing it, you don't feel the loss. You don't feel it. Until it truly Absolutely. Hits your pocketbook, you don't feel it. But then when you do lose in real life, you smarten up really quick. And at that moment when you lose, and I think this is what you and I know it's a long way for me to get here, but when we lose, when we've lost in the past, you went home and thought about how can I get better because I don't want to lose anymore. Because when you're losing and it doesn't matter, or when you're missing and it doesn't matter, you don't fix it. But when it does matter,
exactly,
and you're pissed, because you and I obviously we're slimmer, we're competitors. That's why we do this. We like to compete, and it pisses me off. Obviously, nobody wants to lose money, but it's also about doing it wrong. Or I know there's no necessarily right and wrong when it comes to a strategy, but it's like you did something that you weren't happy with the result. And I think that that is what we're both trying to say here, is that you learn so much when you lose. It teaches you more than anything you'll ever read in a book.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And like you said, it's that competitive nature. It's not even about the dollars and cents at the end of the day. For some people, yeah, it might be all about that. But when you take something personal and it means so much to you, and you really pour your heart into it, that loss is much more personal than it is financial, at least in the beginning, for you to try to write your path. You kind of stay more motivated when you look at it as a long-term perspective, because you'll recover from those hits. Not everybody does, not everybody can, and not saying that I will, and that doesn't even matter. But you know, we can all essentially try to recover from our mistakes and utilize those lessons in going forward. They're all expensive lessons, which is, it's funny how organically it works out when you're younger. And like, say you were to start investing younger, you can make these mistakes. And typically it's safe to assume when you're younger, you're going to have less capital to invest. So it's kind of safer in one sense if you were to lose your capital at that point. Not justifying a loss at any stage, because trust me, there's nothing about losing money when I was younger that didn't hurt just as much as it does today or in the future. But when you take those lessons learned at a younger age, and you didn't blow up your 401k at retirement, basically is what I'm saying, you can now take those expensive lessons and do something with them. And if you don't do something with them, that's the only true financial loss that one can have as an investor or a trader. It's the equivalent of going to college and getting your first tuition bill in the mail and then just ripping up your diploma just because you're not happy with that, the way your that financial situation looks on paper. Just chalk it up as tuition, as lessons learned, and grow from there.
A lot of people write into me in this show and ask me, Anthony, how do I become consistent? And I put this out on Twitter as well. I say it all starts with a consistent process. And what you and I just talked about, and I'm going to use a golf analogy again because I think it just works so well with this.
Perfect, yeah.
Is, for example, you go out, you hit a putt, you went through your process, your routine, it was flawless. You went up there, you hit it right where you wanted to, and you missed it. You go, you know what? I'm okay with missing that because I hit the putt that I wanted. If you rushed it, if you didn't do what you've been practicing, then you're even more pissed about it. Now it's not only that you missed it, but you didn't do what you planned on doing. So with trading, there's such a thing as a good loss. And a lot of people always say, well, what do you mean by that? How could there be such a thing as a good loss? Nobody likes to lose. But if I go out there and take a trade that I liked and I did everything I wanted and it got me out, I heal quick. I don't care as much about that loss. I go, you know what? That was a good trade. I would do it again.
Yes. What you said is truly the only way to remove emotion. Either it was a justifiable entry or it was unjustifiable. And that's it. It's not a matter of being right or wrong, because trades will just magically go against us sometimes. It's really how you manage a position where the right or wrong factor comes in. And exactly what you said is truly the best way to remove emotion. I'm definitely stealing what you said when I tell people this story. That was great.
This was great, Ant. If you're ready, we have some rapid-fire questions. I'll fire away at those.
I'm ready, Ant. What do you got?
All right, everybody. Our rapid-fire segment is sponsored by Trading Technologies. Access the global markets from virtually anywhere with TT. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. And now you can trade cryptocurrency spot and derivative markets side by side. For more information, please visit tradingtechnologies.com. First question, Ant. What trader has influenced your life the most and why?
So, Ant, like I said earlier, I've never had real interaction with traders, you know, one-on-one. So all of my quote unquote advice just came from research and reading. And the biggest influencer on my current style was hands down Peter Lynch. His simplified approach, fundamental analysis, and patience was an absolute game changer for me.
What was one of the hardest things for you to overcome in your trading?
Such an easy question for me. Letting my runners run. That's basically it. I just couldn't stomach giving back some profits initially, but yet ironically, my threshold for pain was just so much higher if I took a loss right out the gate. I essentially had a fear of being in when I was up, and I really learned how to handle that. In hindsight, I knew to just let your runners do their thing.
How has your trading process evolved over the years?
Just became much more longer-term focused.
What is one attribute that you believe every trader should have?
So there's a lot of focus on smarts and a high IQ, but I think it's the EQ or emotional intelligence that allows for sustainability.
What's your favorite book about trading?
Peter Lynch, One Up on Wall Street.
What's your favorite movie about trading?
The Big Short.
What's the best piece of advice that you've received about trading?
Once again, I didn't really receive much advice about trading, but my grandmother would mail me physical articles and clippings from newspapers. And one day I just got one and it said, you can't time the market. That at that exact moment with other things going on in my life, that just really resonated with me. And I stopped trying to nail tops and bottoms. And I realized that was only in attempts to satisfy my ego.
If you could go back in time and give the younger you a piece of advice, what would it be?
I'd say, young ant, just get rich slow.
If you had an elevator pitch me your edge in trading, what would it be?
Just consistency. I would have to say consistency and confidence on pulling the trigger of an entry. I believe buying high quality names at breakouts warrants justification for that establishment of position.
Last question for today, Ant. What's your favorite thing to do when you're not trading? When you're not working those three jobs?
That's another easy one. That's a great one. It would hands down be fishing. I think catch me from the surf, out open ocean, or in the back bays. I'm always fishing.
And where can people find you on Twitter? And if you have a website, tell us what that is too.
No website, but anyone can find me at Anthony Massaroni on Twitter.
And this was awesome. I had so much fun speaking with you today. Thank you very much for coming on Futures Radio Show.
Thank you, Ant. I had a ton of fun. I really appreciate it. Honored that you asked. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.